but definitely, you know, enjoying those things that you work so hard for, because they are trying to protect them because they've worked so hard their entire life to earn these things, is great. But also maybe enjoy them before they're all gone. And, you know, everybody kind of gets like a panic of, I want to leave so much to my children. But again, like the points, things that you were putting away for retirement, definitely use them and enjoy that part of your life. And you can leave things like the remainder of your residence, the remainder of those accounts to your children.
Hey there, points people. You just heard a clip from Sierra Lister, Esquire of Legato. Legato was founded in 2023 by Sierra and Noel, who wanted to make planning for the end easier and less taboo. Sierra is an experienced legal professional in estate planning, and she's created more than 2,000 plans. And Noel brings experience in tech and marketing. In this episode, we discuss what happens to your points if you die. We cover general estate planning and the different ways to ensure that your assets are distributed according to your wishes after you pass away. Sierra also explains the differences between a will, a trust, and probate court, and the importance of planning ahead to avoid leaving your assets up to the unknown. If you're looking for an easy go-to card for miscellaneous expenses, consider the Capital One Venture Rewards credit card, which earns a flat 2x everywhere, and these points can be used with a variety of different transfer partners. Remember, if you decide to apply for the Capital One Venture Rewards credit card or any other card, never apply directly through Google. Always use a friend or creator's referral link. And if you're interested in supporting this show when you apply for your next card, check out geobreezetravel.com/cards. And if you're not sure what card is right for you, I offer free credit card consultations at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. And we have the links to the Capital One Venture card and the free consultation form for you in the show notes as well. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipina-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking. If you're optimizing your life, one of the best things that you can do is avoid decision fatigue. It's that tired feeling that you get after making tons of little tiny decisions every day, like what to wear or what to eat. You don't need to add where to search for flight deals to that. Instead, check out a newsletter subscription service like Thrifty Traveler. They curate dozens of different flight deals, saving you the time and energy from having to do the searching yourself. And each deal can save you hundreds or potentially thousands of dollars off of the ticket cost. They've sent deals with flights to Brazil for $300 instead of the usual $700, JetBlue Mint flights for $987 instead of the usual $1,800, and even points deals like business class flights to Switzerland for only 55,000 points. Another tip to avoid decision fatigue? Don't spend days on a decision that should only take a few minutes. Sign up today at thriftytraveler.com and use the code GEO10, that's GEO10, to take $10 off of the annual subscription. Thank you to Thrifty Traveler for partnering with this episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. Hey, Sierra, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Thank you guys for having me.
We're so excited to learn about what happens to your points when you die and other things related to estate planning. So for everybody who's not familiar with it, what is estate planning?
Estate planning is going to be the process of just making sure that anything that you own, including digital assets, everything in your house, your pets, is going to go exactly where you want it to go when you pass away. Multiple ways to do that. I'm sure people have heard about wills, trust, going to probate court. So you really get to make decisions when you plan versus just leaving it up to the unknown.
What are the differences between those words? What is a will versus a trust versus probate court? What are all of those, and when should you go for each one?
So there's actually three ways that things can unfold when you pass away. First off, you can obviously do no planning. You can die what they call intestate, which means that you end up in probate court without guidance. The state's going to do the default of what they've decided over the years, whatever happened in court cases, how they think things are even. Each state has a little bit different rules. But that judge is just going to pick apart everything, value all of your assets, divide it up. The next thing you can do is have a will. So a lot of people know that, you know, a will is going to be read. What they don't know is it guarantees that you go to probate court. So you're going to go into this probate court process. They're still going to value all your assets, collect everything, make a valuation of it. they're going to want to divide it to their rules, but they take into account what your will says. It's still read by that court proceeding and process. And it's just going to be, again, it's guidance. They're going to try to follow your rules as best as possible, but this is someone that doesn't know you. That third option is going to be to remove it from the court systems altogether. As you can imagine, this expedites things, especially with the court systems being a little bit different now and being a little bit slower and things being on Zoom after COVID. But it's going to expedite that process. It's going to allow a trustee, whether that's a corporation, a law firm, one of your family members, to step in, grab all your assets, read your directions. Hopefully they know you, or you leave them so many directions that they can follow it exactly how they want. That means you can leave your assets to whoever you want, spread it out over time. That's where you hear the term trust fund. So this is making that ultimate contract between you and your beneficiaries where you can do basically whatever you want as long as it's legal.
How much should you have in assets before even considering any of this? Because if someone's listening to this podcast being like, I've got like $3,000 to my name, like, do I even have to go through any of this? Is there a certain like valuation threshold that you should be at before you even consider a will or a trust, or should just anyone do this?
So people with just like basic checking accounts and things like that, they're not going to trigger that probate process because there's a summary probate for everyone in each state. So if it's low, some states it's 25, sometimes it's like $75,000. It's going to want to make sure that they have a plan in place. So anyone that has minor children, a house, has a saving plan, has a business, will definitely want to set up a trust, because then they get that outside of probate court. It's going to be private and they're not going to have to pay an attorney to go through that process. So if you can find an affordable trust solution, you know, the actual cost for drafting the documents, then it's definitely worth it to keep it outside of probate court, even if you're in that middle threshold, because you want to get all of your assets to your beneficiaries rather than pay an attorney to have to go through a court proceeding.
Is there a way to speed up the valuation of these so that your descendants or your beneficiaries don't have to deal with this? Or does it always just go through the usual processes for like, how much is your house worth? How much is your car worth? All of that.
So in probate court, each state will have its own. Again, they each have their own regulations. So they're going to either have somebody come in, an appraiser, or sometimes they'll do multiple appraisals. When you have a trust, your trustee has the discretion to do that. So they can actually look at things and determine the fair market value from like a real estate report or something that's a lot different, rather than going through a very stringent court process, especially if you know you have one or two beneficiaries and you're just trying to get them your assets. It doesn't need to be as harshly divided, and it's not the responsibility of the court. So, I mean, the best way to expedite the valuation process and the distribution of assets, again, is just a trust.
How would they do this valuation for points? Because there's so much conversation on the internet of like, how much are your points worth? And, oh, I can get like 2 cents per point on this, but I can get like 17 cents per point on this. I imagine the courts aren't doing that kind of valuation math, right? How do they decide how much a lump of points are worth?
So I want to say that they would call in an expert. So they actually might call in someone like you, call in someone that just goes on the internet and is looking at points so much, because I can imagine like even when they're looking at like car accidents or something, they bring in an expert who has been on the scene, can recreate these. So I think they would go first to the points holder. So, you know, they go ask Amex, go ask someone what those points were worth. And then they could also, you know, have someone come in and corroborate that valuation of those points. I've never seen it done before. You know, it is a digital asset. They do tell you that they don't have monetary value a lot of times in the contract. So the monetary value might be zero, even though, you know, you could get thousands of dollars worth of flight stuff from these points.
Is there a way to kind of like game that? If you're like, oh, my rich Aunt Julia died, there's no monetary value to these points, just like kick them over to me. They're like not valuable anyway. Like, is that a thing?
I think the court would try to like necessarily like divide them the way that they would say, you know, if there was two kids, it's got to be 50-50, or if it's got to go to the spouse. I think the way to like game them is, again, make your own rule. Maybe in your trust, you say, all my online accounts can be collected and given to my sister. And now your sister has full reign of all of that to purchase it on whatever she wants. Because all those things are worth different things to different people when you're trading in those points. So someone might value a flight a lot more, and it's hard to say what that value is versus, you know, 100 points for something versus the monetary value and the going rate of a flight that day. So you keep it out of probate court. They're not going to try to even value them. You can just say, I want, you know, I want my points split between my kids, just like everything else.
So the only way to do that is with a trust. Otherwise, it's going to go straight to probate court, right?
Yeah, the main thing with the trust is, again, you're keeping it private. It's going to be an outside of court contract. So it's you, the parties in it. No one else has any right to see the trust document. Even when you go to those holders, if there was some sort of kickback from a credit card company where they didn't want to release your points, they could actually just take that one page of the trust that shows that the language is in there, that supports the federal law, that this person is the trustee using a certificate of trust. Everything else would stay private. They don't even have the right to know where it's going. They just know that it's going to the trust. So it gives you a very strong legal leg to stand on when your trustee has these documents and can say, look, they specifically address all the federal laws and said that I can collect all of their digital assets.
What is the process for setting up a will versus a trust?
They're going to be very similar. Usually people will meet with an attorney. They'll go over what they're looking for. The documents will get prepared after they answer questions, and it's going to be drafted. You'll have to go through signing and notarizing things. With a will, there's no funding process. With the trust, you are actually notifying different holders ahead of time. So like insurance companies and stuff, you let them know you have a trust. Again, that's what expedites the settlement. So you have this very fast process of things going very smoothly. So a lot of people prefer to do that work on the front end for their kids and their family members ahead of time anyway. So it's just going to be, you know, having that attorney interview, getting your documents drafted, and then going and getting them signed.
If an airline specifically says, we don't do points transfers upon death, like I think Delta was one of them that I read about where they just say, your account is closed, like there's no redemption value in your points. Does a trust get around that, or is it's just the policy of the airline that if you die, your account gets closed?
So the trustee has the legal right to log in. So that might be a gray area because they said you died, your points are gone. But that would be the safest way to, if your trustee knew how to log in and they could transfer those points and or, you know, use them before a death certificate was issued, before they closed your account, I think it would be very hard for them to say, you know, legally, the federal government said you can have a trustee step in, be you financially when you die. You gave them the right to collect these things that you spent money theoretically on because you gathered them. So it would be very hard for them to come back and ask for, you know, the return of points or the value of those points because you just pass off your fiduciary responsibilities to what they call your successor trustee. So you're the trustee while you're alive. When I died and I had my successor trustee step in, they just become me financially.
What if it's for something that's very much not transferable, like if it's a free night certificate or a flight voucher where it has somebody's specific name on it, those just have to disappear? Or is there any way to transfer those upon death as well?
I would think that if they had a specific name on it, it's going to fall under, you know, that was assigned to that person. I know you can't even really transfer those while you're alive most of the time. So I think that the airlines might win in that one and say, you know, this specifically has this person's name on it. You're not going to be able to use it.
So the trust really transfers over like the passwords and the logins to all of these, and then you can do what you want from there. Or is there any like where it says the airline or the hotel has to move the points over?
So what's really unique about a trust is that while you're alive, if you create a revocable living trust, and that's what most people use, you know, 99% of people use for estate planning, is that you are all the parties while you're alive. So I'm the person who made it, I'm the trustee in control, and I'm the beneficiary. When I pass away, that trustee steps into my shoes. My beneficiaries are now, you know, my kids, my family members, my loved ones. So that trustee steps in, they now have a full authority to act as me when they have my death certificate. So because I specifically acknowledge that they can have that right, and then the best practice is to, you know, give them the logins and say, this is where all my accounts are. This is where all of my, you know, my points are stored, my virtual bank logins, all of those kinds of things, because they'll have that authority given to them by your trust documents, by federal law, to go in and grab those assets. It's still a newer thing. I think the first version of RFATA came out in like 2015. So there hasn't been any, you know, everybody promulgates a law, they make a law, but then they have to wait to see how it unfolds and what happens in court systems. There hasn't been a lot of, you know, litigation on this necessarily because you're giving that person the right. And it's very hard to say that, you know, these assets are not going to go where you want them to go when you've collected them. So I think having that list of assets that need to be collected by the trustee, making that very seamless, making it very private, that trustee doesn't need to notify that holder because you've given them legal rights to be you. So they don't necessarily have to notify them if they can log in and get those points. It's going to be probably the safest way right now to ensure that, you know, as things change in this like digital world and things are evolving in a very archaic estate planning law, to make sure that those things are not lost.
Are you allowed to specify as well what the points are used for as the trustee? Where if you're like, hey, I would like my entire family to like take an annual trip, like using the points and this until the points run out. Is that something you're allowed to do?
Absolutely. So the neat thing about a trust is, again, a probate court, they're like, get it out, divide it up, give people their assets, it's done. They might create like a testamentary trust if there's a minor or there's specific things in there, but they're pretty much trying to get it out of their hands. When you pass over the control to your successor trustee with your own private trust documents, you can delineate anything. So I have people allocating money for certain types of school, setting benchmarks, you know, when my child gets married, give them X amount of dollars. So you can absolutely do that. I've had people have airfare covered because they wanted their family to go on a bike ride in this specific trail when they passed away. So you can get really specific as long as it's legal and that trustee could do it. And you know, that person's going to follow through because you have to trust them. You can pretty much specify anything you want as far as rules that trigger when things are distributed.
As a beneficiary, are you allowed to say, no, I just don't want to do that bike ride. Like, keep the points. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's called declining a gift. So you might have to sign a piece of paper saying, I legally decline this gift. I do not want it. But they cannot force you to take even any distribution. So that actually happens more often than people probably think. But beneficiaries will say no even to a cash allocation, whether they want it to go to their siblings or they just don't want it at all. So you can definitely say no, and it goes back to staying in the trust or being distributed per the terms of the trust.
Yeah, if someone's like, oh, I don't want these points, I don't know what to do with it, I never listened to this podcast episode, and so they're just like, I don't know what to do with this, like I declined this gift of points, what happens to the points?
So if you decline a gift, there's always a contingency plan that's pretty far reaching inside of your trust. It's going to have backups for any type of gift. So a lot of times it'll go per stirpes, which just means it goes to that person's children. And if they don't have any children, it goes back up to the other siblings or other beneficiaries. If that's not how that person's family is set up or how their beneficiaries are, because some people don't have children, some people are designating charities, other types of beneficiaries, they're going to make sure and go through with their person who's helping them set up their trust that they have a backup plan that's usually pretty far reaching. Just because we don't want anything to lapse and we want the trustee to be able to follow those directions and not have to guess anything.
Yeah, that makes sense. One school of thought for all of this would just be, well, spend your points before you die. Like, if at all possible, just spend them. What are your philosophies on, in just broader estate planning, how much people tend to want to pass things on to the next generation versus how much they should just use up their money while they're alive and enjoy as much as they can while gifting a little bit to the next generation if they have the means? Do you see any particular trends with that with your clients?
I do. So a lot of people, we don't talk about points very often, but I think something synonymous is a lot of people have retirement accounts where they've been saving money and their plan is usually to spend it. Yes, they're going to plan for worst case scenario if something happens to them tomorrow where that money's going to go. But most people are really focused on leaving like the leftover because they have their residence that they live in and they're going to live in there till they die. So they want their house that they've spent all this money on to go to their family. But a lot of people really do try to spend their retirement accounts, take those vacations. So I would say, you know, try to work your points in there. You could actually, you know, use your points instead of your IRA money, which can still go to your kids, but definitely, you know, enjoying those things that you work so hard for because they are trying to protect them because they've worked so hard their entire life to earn these things is great, but also maybe enjoy them before they're all gone. And, you know, everybody kind of gets like a panic of, I want to leave so much to my children. But again, like the points, things that you were putting away for retirement, definitely use them and enjoy that part of your life. And you can leave things like the remainder of your residence, the remainder of those accounts to your children.
If you're looking to earn more points and miles, there are usually two main ways to get there. The first one is with credit card sign-up bonuses, where you can easily earn tens of thousands of points by putting your expenses on a new credit card. If you're in the market for a new credit card, we offer free credit card consultations and provide you with personalized recommendations based on your particular travel goals, budget, and lifestyle at geobreezetravel.com/consultations. And we have links to both the free consultation form for you in the show notes. And now, back to the show. Do you find that more people tend to fall short for how much money they think they'll have in retirement, and then they're depending on family or something like that? Or do most people way overestimate how much money they'll need where they're like, I'm going to go to Italy, I'm going to go to France, I'm going to go on all these around the world trips, but then they actually are just like, I've been working for so long for my whole life, I just want to enjoy my house, and then they end up spending a quarter of what they estimated they would spend in retirement. Do you see it tend to fall more one way or the other? We hear so many stories about either case on the internet.
Yeah, I hear it both ways. I work with a lot of financial advisors who bring in clients, or, you know, these clients who are doing estate planning are searching to do estate planning and looking to, you know, plan for the future. So I think I get a group of clients who is a little bit more savvy in that they are actually trying to plan. Like, just like someone who's using their points, you know, they're planning to get money back from the money they're spending. So I definitely have clients that, you know, they're not necessarily going to run out of money. Things might change, budgets might change. But these are people that are very conscious of, I'm going to do an estate plan, I'm going to talk to a financial advisor, I'm going to build a budget. So I don't see a lot of people running out of things. I think just because I've got a niche of people who are like, well, I'm going to plan for my kids, which is so much farther than even planning to, you know, stay in a comfortable place in retirement.
What age is your average client who's going through the estate planning process? Is this something that people are doing as soon as they're getting married or having kids in their 20s and 30s? Or is there something where someone's like, oh, I'm about to retire and I should think about this for, like, as part of the retirement process?
What is amazing about my client demographic is that I am primarily virtual. So when I get clients, they are more tech savvy. They are usually on the younger side. It is usually people who are buying their first home, in their very first serious job where they're making money that they get to save, getting married, talking about having a child. The utmost importance to have these documents in place when you have a minor child, because otherwise your money's going who knows where. So I get a lot of younger clients. I still have that older demographic that wants to, you know, plan for the future because they know that they might be a little bit closer to the time that they're going to utilize their estate plan. But I think people are becoming increasingly more educated. You know, we have so much information now, and people in their 20s and 30s are thinking about these things that weren't customarily brought up until retirement, 50, 60 years old.
Other than the risk of premature death, is there a risk of, if you put off doing your will and trust and estate planning until age 50 or 60 instead of age 30 or 40, what is the risk of doing that if you put it off for a couple decades?
I think if you have people depending on you, so you have any dependent children or family members, it's definitely very important to have these documents in place. Part of the documents too are going to be medical directives and things like that. So if something did happen to you and there was an emergency, you're not going to have those, you might not have those papers in place for people to make decisions. And the other thing is, you know, again, I really push for a trust, because if something happens to you and you're deemed incapacitated, we hear about conservatorships, especially with Britney Spears and a lot of famous people having these conservatorships put over them. That is a court-appointed process. It's not always a family member. Sometimes it is a stranger from the court that is deemed now your caretaker and they're in charge of your finances. I mean, if you are deemed incapacitated by a court and you have a trust in place, your trustee can step in. So this can be a trusted family member, a corporation that has your best interest in mind, rather than this court-appointed guardian or conservator. So I think not having a plan in place, you know, your trust can be implemented and that trustee can step up, that successor trustee can step up even before you've passed away. You're risking losing control if something happens to you where you're mentally, physically incapacitated. Again, you know, if you die, your assets are out there in probate court, or you die intestate and they don't have any directions. It's kind of up for a free reign. So it's just not having any control over yourself and all of your assets if anything happens, whether you're still alive in an incapacitated state or you've died.
Is the trust process overriding in the incapacitated sense as well? If you're like, well, I'm incapacitated now, so not going to be getting on any planes. Does all of your wishes for how the trust will be executed with points and miles work the same way in that case where you're still technically alive, but perhaps just not in a position to travel anymore? Are you able to just say, I would like to have all my points transferred to like my kids or my family members at that point? Or
yeah, I mean, in that situation, if you are communicative, your trustee can work with you. I mean, if someone said, like, that would be if I guess a court said that you were not financially competent anymore, mentally competent to take care of your finances, you still can communicate your wishes. Your trustee is going to work with you. They're there for the benefit of you. So I think it'd be very easy in that situation to say, you know what, give everyone my points. And then the trustee could do that.
Might be easier in that case too, if you're still able to give out passwords to everybody, because there are certain programs like JetBlue or Hilton where you're allowed to pool points with family. So just saying, hello, son or daughter, just like log into my account and like put it in the family pool and then go use my points might actually be a little bit easier in that case. And I've heard of people also where they set up a trigger in Gmail or something where if they don't log in for 3 months, it'll send their passwords to like whoever they want it sent to so that they can go clear out accounts.
Yeah, and just preventative planning, getting people those necessary tools to essentially become you financially that's awesome with the passwords.
Yeah, because I can only imagine like if somebody were to pass in a family, that points and miles are not going to be on the top 10 priority things that most people are thinking about. It might not even be on the list of things that people are thinking about. It's probably, all right, like what's going on with the house, the retirement accounts, like the bank accounts, any cars or main assets like that, but also debts. Like, how does this work with debts or anything else like that? If you're in a will or trust situation, how does that get passed down?
Yeah, so with debts, it's going to be covered by the estate. So before anything gets distributed, creditors and debt collectors have a chance to work with the trustee to get those things cleared. A lot of times that primary residence is liquidated. So that covers any outstanding mortgages or any outstanding credit cards. So obviously you hope your parents, or those people that are leaving you things pass away in a situation where they have positive versus negative debts and nothing to leave. You're not going to assume those debts. You're not going to inherit those debts through the trust, but they are going to be covered first from that estate.
That makes sense. If someone is listening to this and they're in the situation where somebody might have just passed and that person had a few points and miles, but didn't ever set up this will or trust or anything, or that happens like shortly thereafter where somebody doesn't have time to get all of this set up and then they pass. Are you just at the mercy of the airline and hotel and credit card laws at that point? Or what can be done if you don't have a will or trust in place?
I think that you'd be at the mercy of that contract. So I would recommend getting the contract for that credit card, for that airline, and looking at what their points contract says. Because that is the document that's signed. That is the document governing that point system and that, technically like monetary system.
And guys, most of those contracts are not, they're not in your favor. Like Capital One and Chase and Citi, like a lot of those very valuable types of points, they're just going to apply it as like a cash out against any like outstanding statement credits. And that's going to be a 1 cent per point. So that is not the best use of points at all. With American Express, they allow a one-time redemption for your points, which I don't know if you have to use all of the points at that point for just like one transfer or if you have to use it in the Amex portal, but it's not foreboding well for maximizing those points and miles. So use them up before you can. As far as other specific contracts, it's going to depend on the particular airline or the particular hotel. So like with Alaska, they'll let you transfer. With Delta, they won't. If they get your death certificate, your account just gets shut down and the points aren't transferred or anything like that. With Southwest or JetBlue or Hilton, find a way to just get your password to whoever you want it to go to once you die, because then they can like at least log into your Southwest account and start booking flights for other people. They can do the pooling thing with Hilton or with JetBlue. With Hyatt, they're pretty strict. You can only transfer them to somebody with the same residential address. So most of these programs are not going to be the most lenient in, oh, this person died. Let's like help them maximize their points and miles for their beneficiary. It's usually not going to be the case where you can hang on to the points for a while, transfer it to the most optimal transfer partner and get like 17 cents per point redemptions around the world. That's probably not the case you're looking at if you're looking at default mode. So you really do want to be a little bit more proactive in setting up your systems of what happens to my points in the event of a death, but also trying to minimize how many points you have at any given point. I know that so many people are like, oh, I love just looking at the number of having 2 million or 3 million points sitting there. But we always remind people to earn and burn.
You cannot take them with you.
You can't take them with you. And points don't accrue interest. Like, it's not like money where if you leave it sitting there, yeah, you could pass them on and they get more valuable over time. Points don't accrue interest, except for built. And even then, it's just better to spend them rather than to hoard them.
It might go the opposite way. As inflation happens, your points are probably worth less.
Absolutely.
I feel like you definitely should spend them because they're worth more the day you get them than when you hold them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, with the flight devaluations, a flight that costs 20,000 points today could cost 30,000 for the exact same flight next year, just when airlines change up their charts. So earn and burn, use your points. They're meant to be spent. Don't hoard your points. Any other tips when it comes to just even outside of Points and Miles, when it comes to wills and trusts and anything else that people should know as they kind of do estate planning?
I think that people should keep in mind that there are very different solutions now. Being a virtual attorney and being part of a company like Legato has opened up more affordable solutions. We are utilizing technology. We are conscious of things like the Rafalda Act, making sure that you can control your digital assets, because that doesn't just include your points. That's everything in your computer, your social media. As people increasingly are making a living on Instagram, on TikTok, those things are very valuable. That is your business out on the internet that is not being accounted for. You don't want those things to go through the court process. You don't want a judge who's 60 something years old going through the probate process and telling people how those things are valued and how they should be divided. So as our professions change and our knowledge bases change, I think it's really important to make sure that you do have trust planning, and there are very affordable solutions where you can work with an attorney and have that guidance and also, you know, do things, educate yourself. I mean, Legato is a great resource for people in this situation that are trying to educate themselves on points, that would educate themselves on estate planning as well. And it's going to be a very affordable solution comparative to sitting in an attorney's office. You'll know that day what the price is. You don't have to guess on billable hours, and you can set up your plan. We offer free amendments. So as things change, you have another kid, your beneficiaries change, we can help them with that as well. So I just think that if you're trying to plan, you're trying to be savvy with your points, you're trying to make sure that you can preserve your legacy for other people and just pass on the things that you've worked so hard for, I definitely think you should go to hellolegato.com and definitely check it out and just even educate yourself so that you know what the next steps are to leave those things to people.
For sure. What kind of price points would somebody expect for virtual services like yours versus sitting down with an attorney per hour?
So it's really hard to say with an attorney per hour. It depends on your area, your demographic. When we look at like average pricing, it can be anywhere from like $5,000 to $10,000. There's a lot of work where they're calling your holders and they'll bill you hourly. So it's really hard to have an exact amount. Again, it's also totally arbitrary. An attorney can charge whatever they want for their billable hour because you sign a contract with them and then you're locked in. So again, read the contracts, but we can't really tell you exactly. And it's kind of not unknowing that makes people really nervous. Whereas at Legato right now, we do an entire trust package for an individual or an individual and their partner for $2,500. And they can get every document they need to fund, to implement, to settle the estate. We even give directions for your trustee. So if you want your sibling who has no idea how to be a successor trustee to do that, we've given them the color by numbers guide to do that as well. So we try to provide everyone with as much information as they want so they can self-educate, do things on their own. But then you have the attorney there and you have our team to back you up as well. So you can be a go-getter, but you can make sure you're doing it correctly.
That's amazing. And that's so much more affordable than $5,000 to $10,000 or just paying hundreds or thousands of dollars per hour to sit with an actual attorney if you can get all of your paperwork done.
I think the nice thing is too is that one, you can put it on your credit card. So you can get some points. I hear that all the time. People are like, can I put this on my Amex? I'm like, go for it. So you can get some points. It's going to be a virtual service, but you can also plan to make that payment. I think that's one of the scariest things is people think they need all of their information, that they need to figure out everything on their own and, you know, do something like an online document drafting and figure it out all by themselves. Or they have to have all their documents ready, every decision, run into an attorney's office and try to make it as quick as possible because they don't want to be billed hourly. So we wanted to make a really friendly in-between. I mean, our mascot is a parrot. We are not the classic scales of justice law firm. We're trying to really make it different and make it as enjoyable as it can be process for these clients.
Perfect. Well, you mentioned your website is hellolegato.com. Is that the best place to find you guys?
Absolutely. There's going to be tons of information there. Interactive calculators to find out how much money you could actually lose if you go to probate court. So lots of good things to look at there. And I think it's the first place is, you know, we're very education forward. We don't want to keep anything secretive. I want you to have all the education and make the decision on your own. If you decide you don't want it, it's not me convincing you. It's not a sale. We're going to give you all the information under the sun so you can make your educated decisions.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Sierra, for coming on to the podcast. This is such an interesting topic that I think people don't think about too much. And when people are like, oh, I just want to like hoard my points, there are levels to the consequences of doing that. And if you want to hold them till death do you part with your points, I wouldn't recommend that. But if you do, please make sure you have an estate plan in mind for what you want to do with those afterwards.
I absolutely did not think about the inflation of the dollar and how everything becomes increasingly more expensive every day. So I definitely want to go spend all my points.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please check out the links in the show notes for more information on any of the cards. Also, if you apply for a card using the links on that page, I may receive a commission too, so please and thank you. P.S. I hear the links work better in Internet Explorer or Safari, and sometimes the credit card applications tend to glitch out in Chrome. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular points program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels!